Welcome everybody to the Moose Room. It is just Emily in today, but I am joined by a very special guest. If you may recall, it is May, so we are doing our Mental Health Awareness Month series in with all of our HPAI updates as well. But I am so excited to have a returning guest back on the podcast today. So we are chatting once again with Monica McConkie. Hey, Monica.
Hi, it's so good to be here. Love the Moose Room. I'm a big fan.
Yes, we're so happy to have you back. Now, Monica, maybe if we have some people that haven't heard your previous episodes, you just want to quickly remind us who you are and what you do.
Yeah, for sure. So I am a, in short, farm girl turned farm counselor. So I am a behavioral health counselor, have been for many, many years, like almost 30, which is kind of crazy to think about. And I have a private practice located up near Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. But really, the work I do is all throughout the state, and I work with farmers and ranchers. So I'm legislatively funded. Thank you, Minnesota State Legislature, for funding two positions, Ted Matthews and myself. And we work with farmers every day. I'm out on farms. I'm on the phone with farmers, on Zoom sessions, just talking about all the things that cause them stress, what's hard in relationships, whatever's on their mind that we need to talk about.
Yeah, you know, and I will say, because I love to say it at every given opportunity, we are, Minnesota is the only state in the nation with a program like this, where the legislature funds free counseling for farmers directly. So that is very cool. And I, you know, Monica, you know this, I so appreciate the work that you do and the work that Ted does. And I just think we'd be in a lot different position in Minnesota if we didn't have you and Ted. So I'm grateful.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for that, Emily. It's I love my work, my most favorite work I've done throughout my career. And hopefully I can continue doing it for a long time.
Well, I hope so too. And some of you know this, Monica and I do get the opportunity to work together here and there. We do some teaching and some programming together, you know, and just for me, it is so cool to have a resource like Monica available to connect farmers to, you know, I won't lie, she does a little counseling for me on the fly when we need it. So really great to have you back on the Moose Room, Monica.
Yeah, really good to be here.
And, you know, you've been here before, so you've been asked the guest questions. But
yes.
I thought I would come up with a different question kind of on theme with our month here for you. So I will answer this question as well. So
okay.
What is your favorite like self-care practice to do? What's one thing you just love to do to take care of yourself?
I would say for me, it's gotta be like being out in nature, hiking, snowshoeing, cross-country skiing. And a close second would be gardening, flower gardening, vegetable gardening, stuff like that. So
my guess for you was hiking. I was like, yeah. I think you might say hiking, because I know you talk a lot about going hiking and you always talk about it very fondly. So I'm like, that must be something that she really.
Yes. So what about you?
My favorite thing would, kind of similar to you, but just like being active. So I have a dog, so I like to walk our dog a lot. Like we'll go on, you know, 2-3 mile walks at a time. So yeah, just being outside, moving my body, and spending time with my pets. That is, I think pets are very incredible for our mental health, and I'm very grateful for my dog every day. Yeah. So that's my big one, is kind of walking around, moving my body, being with the pets. Yes. Well, if you listeners out there have been following along this month, you know we've been doing a few different things for Mental Health Awareness Month, while also being on top of everything else happening in the dairy and beef industries right now. But today is really going to be like a part two. So if you remember, Joe and I, a few weeks ago, we opened up the mailbag. So we had asked all of you wonderful listeners for your questions about mental health, right? So things you were always curious about, but just never asked, or you maybe aren't sure where to ask or who to ask. So we asked you to send them to us. So we went through some of your questions in that previous episode, but we brought in Monica now. I had to bring in, you know, the big guns to help answer some more of your questions. So we're going to work through those questions here now. I am really excited about some of these. They're questions I maybe haven't thought about either. So we're going to dive in. So this first question, and I love this question. Scrolling on your phone, is it healthy or not? Many people describe it as a way to escape. Is it good in small amounts and bad in large amounts? What is the signal to tell us whether or not it is helpful?
I have a couple thoughts on that. For one, I'm kind of a everything in moderation type person. Like, you know, some things are bad, period. They're just bad, even if you only do a little bit of it. And some things are good, no matter what. Scrolling on the phone, I think, falls in kind of that balance category. So how much of your time and energy is it taking? Number one, are you neglecting duties? Are you neglecting self-care? Are you neglecting kid relationships, spouse-friend relationships because of the scrolling? So kind of taking a snapshot of what is this replacing in my life? What am I giving up because I'm doing this? And then the other thing I would say is, how do you feel when you're done? Because a lot of times we scroll and we get into whatever and we leave it feeling worse, feeling more burdened, feeling stressed. And so that's an indication that probably not helpful. I talk to farmers who start scrolling and they see like the negative comments about farming practices. And it really gets them down because they're working as hard as they can. And then they're seeing these posts on social media of kind of anti-agriculture people, and not worth it, not worth the time. Unless you feel like you can be in a capacity to roll with it, to not allow it to affect you, I just wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So it's complex. I think limiting time is super important. I think it's all about balance. And, you know, we're hearing more and more studies coming out of parenting where kids are feeling so neglected because parents are on phones. And it's interesting that information is just coming out now, because when the whole smartphone thing started, those kids, quote unquote, are now in their 20s and having kids. And it's, you know, it's just interesting to see the research. So use with caution, I would say, and purpose, intentionality. Don't let it go without some intentionality. Like, why am I doing this? How long am I doing this? What's my purpose for doing this?
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I think, yeah, phones can be bad. It's really a matter, like, this can be the hardest part. And that's, you need to just sit and be honest with yourself. You know, of the very things you mentioned, Monica, like, how am I using it? How long am I using it? You know, this in the question we got, they said, like, well, a lot of people talk about it as an escape. Is that good or bad? I don't think wanting an occasional brief break from reality is a bad thing in and of itself. That's just Emily's thoughts. So I am somebody, you know, if I'm not out and about on the road, I'm in the office or in my home office working. So that's something for me, like, I will get up from my desk. I try to get up from my desk, you know, at least every 2 hours, move my body. Then maybe I'm going to have a snack or it's lunchtime, right? So I will pull out my phone, but then I tell myself, like, I am just going to look at this type of content for, you know, the 10, 15 minutes it's going to take me to eat my lunch. And that's going to be part of my break. And then when it's done, I'm done, you know? And so, yeah, being really intentional about how I'm using it, and also being, you know, truthful with myself. Like, yeah, there are days where I'm like, I literally just want to sit and scroll on my phone for an hour and just get lost in it a little.
Yeah, I don't have capacity for anything
else.
Right,
right. And I think that's okay to do. And it's also a matter of, I'm trying to be mindful, though, about what am I scrolling on?
Absolutely. That's right.
You know, so what am I being exposed to? Because, yeah, you don't want to leave feeling worse, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, like taking in some of that stuff's not bad. It's just, again, the moderation and how are you doing?
Exactly. Yeah. And comparison, I would say that's another trap from scrolling is I see all the things other people have. And I do hear this from farm couples is that, you know, they're going on vacations. They have the new truck there, all these things. And we're barely making ends meet. And so it's easy to also get caught in that comparison trap, which is not a good place to be.
All right. So I think we've kind of landed on, you know, the scrolling does not have to be bad, but it's really about being mindful with what you're doing with it. But let's move on to our next. So this is kind of two questions in one about anxiety. So this person writes, specifically the need to move and the inability to sit still in a crowd or at a social gathering, described as a tension that builds that can only be relieved by movement, like going for a walk. Is this normal? What can we do to relieve that feeling without leaving a social gathering? So feeling squirrely, that's how I would describe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as far as the normal piece, yes. I mean, anxiety presents in a lot of different ways. A lot of times for people, it's racing thoughts, fast heartbeat, tense muscles, you know, it appears in, manifests itself in a lot of ways. The anxiety of sitting and feeling like you don't have the ability to get up and move can really amp it up. It's almost like when you have a mosquito bite and it really itches and you want to scratch it so bad, but you're having to force yourself not to. That would be kind of the feeling, like I have to get up and move. And part of that is the whole mind-body connection. And so I don't know if you've heard of the whole vagus nerve piece of our body. A lot of people don't know about that. There's really some cool research out there. But it's a nerve that starts at our brainstem and goes down our spine, connects every part of our body. Our throat, our muscles, our lungs, our internal organs. That is the true mind-body connection. So that's why when we're anxious, we feel our heartbeat faster. When we're anxious, we feel our stomach tighten up or we get nauseous. It is the same thing like with this need to move. Like I'm feeling anxious and I just have to have air. I have to have space. I have to have movement. And so I guess my challenge for this person is to really focus in on what is causing the anxiety. Like, is it chronic stress, chronic worry? That's just how you've been built for a long time. Or are there thoughts going on in your mind that are driving that feeling of anxiousness? And then we need to get our hands on those thoughts and work on those to calm. If you don't want to get up and move, if you want to kind of slow that feeling or calm that feeling, then it's all about taking some slow, deep breaths. Maybe it is trying to refocus your mind on something else. Get yourself kind of distracted with something. Maybe it's just like doing some muscle stretches in your chair, like lifting your legs up on your toes and stretching your calves and then stretching out with your heels on the ground and just some little motion. So there's things that can be done if you want it to change. Obviously, you're not doing anything damaging, you know, by getting up and going for a little walk. I would also wonder about like that feeling of claustrophobia or social anxiety, that if it's just hitting at social events or public gatherings, maybe it's not so much about sitting. Maybe it's about being around people and that input, the stimulation is just too much. So more to explore there, but those are some of my initial thoughts.
Yeah, well, and my first thought was kind of like fight or flight, which is something our bodies go into when we're under stress. And so that can be why you're feeling like you need to move. It's because your, you know, your most basic instincts are actually telling you, take flight. This is a dangerous situation in some way. And I would say too, and again, I'm not like an official expert or scientist on this, right? But Monica was describing a lot of, you know, somatic type reactions. So our body reacting to what's going on. And so if you are trying to work on not needing to have that urge to stand up or walk away, another thing that's helpful for a somatic reset is compression. So, you know, maybe wearing a compression shirt when you're going out, because just something tighter and heavier across your chest can help keep your breathing slowed down, your heart rate slowed down. Heck, even like putting a kid on your lap for a little bit and just feeling their weight on you. So yeah, kind of that weight compression piece that can help with, you know, what's called somatic reset. And that might be part of what's telling your body, get up and move. So if you can do some of that reset, compression helps with that. The deep breathing Monica mentioned helps with that.
That's a great idea. Another thought I had when you were talking is just tuning into your five senses one at a time to calm. You know, just tune into what am I seeing, colors, shapes, movement, then go to hearing. What am I hearing? What noises, what music, what's going on around me? All your five senses run through. Just spending a few moments on each one, pairing with some deep breaths can help reset and calm your mind as well.
Yeah. That is something I definitely do. I call it my sensory inventory. So yeah, I go through everything I can see and then it's everything I can hear. And you know, as you go down the senses, the lists get a little shorter. You know, I'm not tasting a bunch of things at once, but just, yeah, tuning into one singular part of what my body is doing and only focusing on that part for even just 30 seconds really helps kind of calm the brain down. For me. All right. Boy, that was a good question. We have another good one here. So, what causes delayed processing? Many people can keep it together in the moment, but later, sometimes hours or days or even weeks later, they are hit with the emotion. So, I think this person is just kind of asking about, you know, when something happens, maybe something scary or dramatic or hard, whatever it might be. Why do some of us kind of react right away or feel ready to confront it right away? And why do some of us need time?
That is such a good question too. That really has to do with brain functioning. And when we look at our brains, there's a little piece called the amygdala. It's about the size of an almond and it's right near the kind of up above your ear in your brain area. That is where all of your emotions and your memories are stored. So if something triggers a memory, the emotions that are attached to that memory are going to come back to you. So if you think about it like a song you grew up listening to and memories attached to that song, you hear the song come on the radio. You can even sometimes smell the smells that you were smelling when that song is like, you know, recorded in your memory.
Yeah.
So what happens in our brain is when that part of our brain is firing, when the emotional part of our brain is firing, the thinking, processing part of our brain shuts down. So this person is experiencing the opposite. It sounds like they are staying in their rational mind and kind of plowing through whatever needs to be plowed through. And then it's like it catches up with them later and the emotions come. And that, I mean, it's a very real thing where, and I see this so much with our egg producers, there's stuff that has to get done. Like from a very practical standpoint, I mean, I talk to people who, you know, the parent dies and they have to go milk the cows because you have to, you know, you can't let your emotions take over. So part of that is just the way your brain is kind of creating safety for you. And especially if it's a tough thing that's very emotionally laden, maybe you don't feel like you can open up that box. Because if you do, in that moment, your ability to hold it together, to process, to communicate well, to make decisions is probably going to be compromised, which is okay. We all have those moments. But often people that really feel that need to really keep it together, I can't let my guard down, I can't let my emotions show, I need to be on my game, it'll catch up with you. And it sounds like this is what's happening a little bit with this person, is they are keeping it together. They're keeping their rational brain turned on, emotions shut down. But after a while, the emotions overtake the rational brain and they are sitting with it.
I want to kind of expand on that question, right? And I don't know who sent this question in, but they didn't ask it. But I'm also wondering about how this might come into play with relationships specifically, right? So maybe something happens that's very serious or traumatic, and maybe one partner is kind of processing right away and having emotions right away and wanting to talk about it right away. And another partner is more of a delayed processor. So, you know, when it comes to delayed processing and differences in processing in relationships, what are your thoughts or ideas for that?
Yeah, well, the first that I have is related to that communication styles assessment that you shared with me a few years ago and we use in our farm coupler retreats, and I use all the time with couples. And basically, the premise of it is this assessment a person takes, and you gain an understanding of what is your primary communication style. And I look at it in a little broader perspective, is how do you process information and share that information out? Sometimes people are focused on different things. There are action-oriented people where I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this. I just need the action item. I just need to go. I need to do. I'm not going to sit in emotion. I'm like more behavioral. Give me a task. Give me the bottom line. Let me go. And then you have your processors who really want to spend time talking it through, pros and cons, exploring emotions. How is this impacting me and us? They need time. And then the third is the people, which are also in the same boat. If something happens, something difficult happens, they're going to be spending a lot of time thinking about how does this impact the family? How does this impact us, our marriage, our business? They're going to really be focused on the impacts to family. And so I think that's part of this scenario, is you'll have people with very different personality styles and communication styles who deal with events, trauma, stress in very different ways. Mm-hmm. Even your fight or flight people, when stress comes, you know, there might be somebody who wants to, we're gonna talk this out now. There might be yelling, loudness, throwing. It's like fight. And then there are people that just withdraw. Mm-hmm. That's your flight. And then the other piece of where I see it impacting is in relationships. And these people often find each other, interestingly enough, where there will be a pursuer and an avoider. And a pursuer wants to do that processing. We need to talk this out. We can't just sweep this under the rug. It's going to come back. We got to deal with this. Where the avoider does just that. They're out the door, they're on their phone, they're playing with the dog, they're out doing chores, anything they can do to avoid having that conversation. And like I said, the two of them seem to really find each other, and it doesn't often work well. But lots of reasons where there would be that processing difference, we'll call it a difference, personality styles, communication styles, past experiences, past traumas can kick in. Like, I've had a bad experience with this. I'm not going back there. I'm not touching it. I'm not talking about it. Really, bottom line is communication is so the key. Mm-hmm. Understanding each other, understanding why you're getting the response you're getting, exploring that together in a non-confrontational way. It's like learning about each other, because it is a true thing.
Yeah. And we were talking before about self-awareness. And I think that's a piece of this too, is being honest with yourself that, you know, yeah, maybe I do need more time to process, and then advocating that for yourself. So, you know, saying like, I know you like to talk about these things right away, but I just need a little more time to process. Can you give me at least till tomorrow? Right. You know, and kind of encouraging some compromise in that way too, of maybe you'd rather process for a week, but your partner wants to process this minute. So we'll do 2 days, you know, so that way there's compromise on both ends. And I think that's a huge piece of that communication piece, is just being aware of how you do things and what your needs are, and telling whoever you're with, whatever the relationship may be. You know, there's lots of different types of relationships where having these conversations can really help them stay healthy.
Absolutely. Oh, good thoughts.
Yes. All right. So we have one more question, and I'm really looking forward to this question, specifically your answer to it, Monica, because I know that this is something you probably have some experience with. This question reads, farmers are busy and many days they're gone for significant amounts of time. Sometimes I feel guilty about not seeing my kids, but there are days when it is necessary to get the work done. How do I find the balance so that the guilt is manageable?
This is a good question. And I will just say right out, there are times, there are seasons where there will not be balance. There will not. And when we try to make it happen, we only are, it feels like we're banging our head against a wall, because we're failing on one end or another.
Yeah.
Like we should be, you know, the weather's right. We should be out, whatever, planting, chopping, baling, harvesting. But the kids haven't seen me for a couple of days, and I also should be home. That's number one. Know that there will be seasons, and again, this should be openly communicated with the family, that there will be seasons where there will not be balance. Number two is, during times of stress, we often really have polarized thinking. So we see things in really black or white, yes or no, right or wrong, where the answer is often somewhere in the middle of all of that. So in this case, it's I'm meeting my perception of what a good father, good mother, good parent should be by spending time with my kids, or I'm not. And it's like polarized thinking. During these especially out of balance times, look in the middle area, like quality versus quantity during those times. When you're home, when you're with the kids, tuning in to them, really focusing what's going on. If they're older, you know, if they have a phone, can you be in touch with some Snapchats or some texts, or asking them how their day is? You know, there are just little things you can do to establish connection, but knowing that it's not going to be ideal during those really busy farming times is important.
Yeah, you know, and I will say this, you know, I am not somebody who has kids of my own, but I am a kid who was raised on a farm. And I certainly remember the seasonality of things. And certainly there were times when I felt like, just miss my dad. I just haven't seen my dad, really, right? You know, and I encourage to think about, too, be mindful of when you can be back in balance, right? What's the plan for those times? So I grew up on a dairy farm, something, and Monica, you've heard me say this, something I give my parents so much credit for is, even though we were dairy farmers, every single summer as a family, we went on a summer vacation.
That's
we
awesome.
Took a week off from the farm and we always went up north. And so that was a piece too, that like, I can just remember as a kid in those busy seasons, you know, I'm not seeing dad as much, but we also always knew we had the summer vacation to look forward to, you know, so there was kind of that light at the end of the tunnel. And so that provided something for us as a family to collectively be excited about. It was a good, I think, reminder sometimes, like for us kids, when my mom just needed us to stop whining, being like,
yeah,
don't forget, you know, we have vacation in 3 weeks.
This is coming. Yeah.
And so it was like, That's good. Also took the time to recognize, like, maybe we're not in balance right now, but when we are, you know, the family is going to be a priority. And like taking a week off of a dairy farm, right? That's a huge.
Yes, that's huge. Huge.
So yeah, that's something I always give my parents a ton of credit for. And I think, you know, at least maybe a little bit helped me not be quite as messed up, right? Because they did find a way.
Help me not be quite as messed up. I like that. And another thing you can do is, you know, I'm all for prevention and preparation. We know every year we're going to run through these busy times.
Yeah.
So what can you do to kind of prep or have conversations like, we're heading into this. This is what it's going to look like. I'm going to be really busy. And even if it rains, I've kind of got to catch up on stuff I haven't been able to do. So just having those conversations prior to the busy time hitting.
Right. Yeah. And maybe it's even a matter of, you know, adjustments. Like I know I have some friends with young kids. And so like during planting season, like, well, the kids get to stay up 45 minutes later, you know, because they're out of school. And then that way they can see, you know, their dad when he comes back in. So also, you know, just those little adjustments like that, like you said, Monica, we really need to focus on quality, not quantity. And I think you can get better quality when you do kind of plan for it or, yeah, have a strategy to get some of that, you know, FaceTime with dad built in or whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly. And there's always the option if the kids are on the farm, I mean, riding in the tractor with you. I mean, every farm family is different, but, you know, spending time actually working alongside of you is a great bonding. I mean, it's really great bonding time.
We have gotten through the mailbag. I want to thank all of our listeners who sent in such wonderful questions. I think we're going to do this again next May. So listeners out there, keep that in mind. You know, we love being able to answer these questions for you.
Very fun. And also keep in mind that I'm you Minnesota farmers and ranchers, you know, Ted and I are here for you.
Absolutely. And if you need to get a hold of them and you're not sure how to, you can visit mnfarmstress.com. You can also just email us at the Moose Room and we can get you connected to Monica as well. I think we're going to wrap it there, Monica. Do you have any closing thoughts or, you know, advice you want to share for folks as we are in
this gosh, that's a tough question for a mental health counselor to wrap it up in a couple words. But I would just say, you know, focus on if there's four areas to focus on for mental health, it's your physical health, who you surround yourself with, paying attention if your thoughts are helpful or unhelpful, and it's connecting with something that gives you hope and brings you joy. Those four areas are so key. And like I said, there's a lot behind that and around that that we could talk about all day. But in brief, that would be my closing plug.
All right. Well, I think we're going to leave it there. That is a fantastic closing thought. Thank you again, Monica, for being on the Moose Room. And thank you to all of our listeners out there for your wonderful, wonderful questions. We look forward to continuing to have these conversations.
Thanks, Emily, for having me.
Yeah, of course. We're so glad that Monica joined us. And if you want to find us on the web, you can find us at extension.umn.edu. Again, you can find Monica's information and more of the Farm Stress programs in the state at mnfarmstress.com. You can find us on Twitter at UMN Moosroom and at UMN Farm Safety. And of course, Bradley is on Instagram at UMNWCROCDairy. That is a wrap for today. Take care of yourselves, create a great day, and we will catch you next time on the Moose Room. Bye, everyone.